There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to a special Meet the Expert episode of ModPath Chat. I'm delighted to have Professor Reinhard Büttner as our guest today. Professor Büttner is a chair of pathology at the University of Cologne in Germany. He's a world leader in the field of lung cancer genomics. His work has impacted the lives of countless patients with pulmonary tumors through his contributions to the advances in targeted therapy. Thank you, Reinhard, for joining me today.
It's my pleasure, George. Thank you for inviting me.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for everything you do for us, for the journal, including your own contribution and reviews and the recent editorial, which I'm sure we're going to touch upon during our conversation today. The editorial keeps reminding me further that there is still a lot of work in lung cancer, although we usually use lung cancer as the paradigm for how targeted therapy and precision pathology in general should be practiced. Discoveries are ongoing and more precision is needed. So can you share with us and be free to pick the conversation starter on what's happening now in lung adenocarcinoma or non-small cell lung cancer in general, and what's your view on that?
Yeah, lung cancer stands as an amazing topic in pathology. If you just look back 10 years from now, it's not long ago that we thought there's only non-small cell lung cancer and small cell lung cancer, and that more or less was it. We believed it's a more or less common entity, a common disease. And now we see it's a basket of many different diseases with clinical, epidemiological, but also therapeutic definitions. I was invited, very proud, an editorial on two genomic studies looking at a very peripheral type of lung cancer, that is invasive mucinous adenocarcinoma, frequently growing at the very periphery, subpleural, multilocular, bilateral. And these studies from Memorial Sloan Kettering and also from East Asia, from Taiwan, show by very deep genomic insights that is a clonal disease, although it looks clinically heterogeneous. And also, it is a specific genomically defined subentity or an entity that has many features in common with enteric adenocarcinomas, like the mutational spectrum in KRAS, in the non-mucinous lung adenocarcinomas, we typically mostly have KRAS G12C mutations. In this type, we have the same mutations we typically find in colorectal cancers or pancreatic adenocarcinomas. So it's genomically different, it's clonal, and it's also quite different as an entity because some tumors arise in the background of idiopathic lung fibrosis. So that makes it very different and defines a new subtype of lung adenocarcinoma.
Very interesting. And I believe the studies you're referring to is the one that just came in Modern Path by Kim et al. And I believe they're from Seoul, South Korea, rather than Taiwan.
South Korea.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And also the study by one of our editorial lead team member, Natasha Rechtman's group from Memorial. And so what we're, you know, it seems like the population is different because, like you mentioned, one had the UIP in many patients and the other didn't. And can you comment also on the surprising findings of non-smoking signature or the relationship to smoking or not?
Yeah, there is, it's much less associated to a smoking signature. We know this from the most frequent type of lung adenocarcinomas and squamous cell carcinoma, that they typically have a smoking signature. Specifically in the East Asian study, that was not the case. In the study from United States, from New York, it was more like a mixture. There were patients with also smoking signature, and it shows dramatic differences in the genetic footprint that is between Asian patients and European Caucasian patients. We know that also from EGFR mutation. We have in Germany, for example, very much like the Western world, we have between 10 to 12% of activating EGFR mutations. East Asia has at least 50%. Actually, KRAS mutations are much rarer than in the European patients. So this is another example that there is a genomic differences in different populations throughout the world.
And speaking of KRAS, and so not all KRAS are equal, as you alluded to, you know, colon pancreatic versus this entity in the lung, the mutation and the alteration is different. And my understanding from what I gather that this impact therapy, that not all treatment, now there is a lot of excitement about inhibitors of KRAS, finally, you know, cracking that difficult difficult nut, right? So can you explain a little bit to our audience what is the difference and how is the future gonna resolve these differences in terms of a pan KRAS inhibitor?
Yeah, the RAS story is actually a major story of innovation in cancer therapy. It's one of the RAS mutations that lead to the activation of the MAP kinase signaling axis. The constitutive activation are amongst the most frequent oncogenic driver mutations in human cancers. And there have been generations of drug developments trying to target an inactivated, a mutated KRAS. And due to toxicity, all of these inhibitors like farnesyl transferase inhibitors, for example, failed to make it into the clinic. However, recently, a landmark paper from San Francisco, Professor Schuchardt's lab, showed that the mutation G12C leads to a cysteine residue specifically in the mutated cancer KRAS. And he I mean, he's a very, very charismatic speaker. You should listen to or talk to him. And he says, I have the cystine Googles on. So he looks at every oncogene, whether there is a cystine that he could target by an irreversible cystine binding chemical drug that destroys specifically the mutated oncogene. And that was very successful. A small molecule that targets the GTPase fold of KRAS and is also specific for the mutated cystine has a dual layer of specificity. And that seemed to solve or reduce the problem of toxicity. So it's super specific for the cancer mutation. And these drugs made it into the clinic. And the G12C mutation in the Western lung cancer population is the most frequently mutated oncogene. It's half of all KRAS mutations and about 35 to some studies, 40% of lung adenocarcinomas in the Western world have KRAS mutation. Half of them are KRAS G12C. So it's a beautiful target, and lung cancer again was the innovative tumor to drive a new layer of personalized therapy. These mutations, of course, exist also in other tumors like colon cancer. I know also patients that have been treated with these inhibitors, but it's much less frequent than in lung.
That's where the G12D or V is.
Yes,
is
more the enteric types. Yeah, it's also interesting, probably relates to the cell of origin. Yeah, that different amino acid residues in the mutations drive KRAS in a different way or drive it in a different stem cell niche. We don't fully understand it. But when you look at, for example, a pancreatic cancer, KRAS G12C is super rare, although 90% of pancreatic adenocarcinomas have a KRAS mutation. It's more like KRAS G12V or G12D or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So the niche, the location is important, the homing, not in deciding which mutation.
Probably. Yeah, it shows that molecular pathology is really driving understanding of cell origin in cancer. We understand how to treat cancer. So it's also a biomarker for choosing most effective treatments. And it's also something you can use for monitoring diseases, because once you have a very clonal driver mutation, you can use that to monitor the course of the disease in blood.
Excellent. And the future, so these drugs would not work on the ones you mentioned for the cystine would not work on tumors of pancreatic or intestinal for that reason, or there are some more wider effect.
Well, the KRAS G12C inhibitors will work only if the mutation leads to a cystine exchange. If it's a valine, it won't work because the chemical attack is not possible. However, there is now new generations of KRAS inhibitors coming in. There are proteins necessary for the exchange of GDP to GTP, so-called GDP exchange factors. It's protein is called from the Drosophila genetics source, son of sevenless. Mm-hmm. And there now is a new generation of SOS inhibitors that theoretically would inhibit all types of RAS mutations. And we have other tumors like melanomas with NRAS mutations, the plentifold other types of KRAS mutations, HRAS mutations in bladder cancer, for example. So there is a lot of space for innovation to come. Wait.
Class is important, and it's amazing that we're already talking about new generation RAS inhibitors, and it's something that just literally happened probably in the last 2-3 years, right? So Amazing.
Yeah, in lung cancer, we have seen introduction of two, in on average of two new drugs reaching the clinics every year. There's now the RET inhibitors coming in. They have been approved first by FDA, then by EMA. We have seen the KRAS G12C inhibitors. We have seen the dual bispecific antibodies, for example, amivantinib that targets EGFR and MET simultaneously. Hmm. We've seen the combinations of immune chemotherapies a few years ago. We have seen the dual BRAF mutation blockade coming in, and so forth. There's every year there is a major step forward.
Hopefully there'll be one day where it covers the entire landscape of mutations and lung cancer patients can do even better, because people like you in the field would not stop till they conquer cancer completely. So it's we're honored as a pathology field to have somebody like you among us who's dedicated his life work to advances in precision therapeutics and precision pathology.
That is something. Let me stress this. I mean, pathology. I started almost 40 years ago in pathology. So I'm pretty old now. I'm over, more or less. And then it was practically anatomical pathology. You would look at slides. It would try to classify, to get relations between morphology and disease entities. That has completely changed during my lifetime. We now have very deep insights in the causes of cancers. For example, we see, as you mentioned, the mutational signatures. We can say this tumor is probably caused by UV light. We have actually a few years ago studied on a rare skin tumor, a pleomorphic dermal sarcoma, showing it's a heavily UV-driven hypermutated tumor of the skin. Then you have the smoking signature, we have the microsatellite signature, we have the BRCA signatures, HRD, and so forth. So that gives us a very deep insight in the causes of cancer, I would say, plus all the oncogenic and tumor suppressor mutations. Plus, now we have predictive markers. We are in the center. Pathology is in the center of deciding what type of treatment would a patient receive. So that makes pathology, I would say, super interesting. It is an investigative discipline and puts you into the center of oncology, actually.
Very well said. It's not only you're helping patients, you're doing very important science as a pathologist. And that's why I fully agree with you. I always say the golden era of pathology is yet to come. And now with all the tools in genomics and immunotherapeutics and how they impact our field, it's making it even more and more exciting. We don't want to talk about AI and digital paths. That's yet another.
Computational pathology is also coming in, definitely, putting a new layer. I just can say when I left medical school and was looking what to do in my life as an MD, every one of my friends and students around me went to subjects like endocrinology, neurology, genetics, because those were the drivers of innovation. Yeah, we could understand the action of hormones, regulation of growth, genetic insights. I can still remember around 2000 when we got the first human genome, huge European American initiative worldwide. And now my feeling is that when I go to medical school, most of our students, when they go to a lab discipline, they are highly interested in pathology because it's so investigative. It's so looking at the center of malignant tumors that it's intellectually rewarding. It is clinically rewarding. And it gives you a chance to do something for the patient. And that, I think, attracts the spirits of young people. I'm very happy about this. I'm super optimistic about our young pathologists.
Wonderful.
They will change the world. I won't, but they.
Well, you've done your part and more, but I'm pretty sure you still have a long ways to go in contribution. Reinhard, this has been really inspirational and enjoyable. And I'm pretty sure we're going to have you again with one of, I'm sure, soon publications that you'll be sending our ways. I again, thank you for all your contributions to modern pathology. And this has been a pleasure.
Thank you, George, so much. And I would also specifically thank you and all the team for managing Modern Pathology. It's a central journal. It's a super high standard journal. I think it's the most valuable journal in pathology. And we've seen wonderful genomic studies, molecular studies, but also anatomical path studies. I really, really like and promote the journal.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.